Well, again, thank you for joining us for this first session of the 2015 AgriBility Virtual National Training Workshop. We have six webinars scheduled over the next 3 days. We hope you're able to join us for as many of those as possible. My name is Paul Jones. I manage the National AgriBility Project, which is headquartered here at Purdue University. Our session this morning is on cultural competency, and specifically on outreach to migrant and year-round farm workers. Our presenter is Mary Jo Dudley, and she is director of the Cornell Farm Workers Program and also a recipient of the 2012 White House Champion of Change Cesar Chavez Legacy Award. So we're very thankful to have her join us, and she will be giving the bulk of our presentation after I give you just a few basic webinar instructions. If you have questions during the presentation, there are a couple options. Please feel free to type those in the chat window, and you may need to activate your chat icon at the top of your screen. Again, use the arrow on the side of the chat pod in order to enter a question. Also, we'll have a question and answer period at the end if you would like to ask your question verbally. We are recording just the audio for this session, and we'll be archiving that on our standard archive page. Finally, for those that are not familiar with AgriBility, we are sponsored by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and our focus is on assisting people in agriculture that have some kind of a disability or other physical impairment or even a mental health impairment. We partner on each AgriBility project with land-grant university in the state and at least one nonprofit disability services organization, and there are currently 20 state projects around the country. There's one national AgriBility project, and again, that's led by Purdue University and the Breaking New Ground Resource Center. And our partners on the project include Goodwill of the Finger Lakes, the Arthritis Foundation Heartland Region, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Colorado State University. And if you would like to learn more, please visit our website at agribility.org. We have approximately 42 other webinars archived if you would like to visit those and an abundance of other resources. This time, I'm going to turn things over to Mary Jo Dudley for the bulk of the presentation, and then I will return during the polling and question and answers. So if you'll give me just a second, I will transfer presentership to her.
Am I on? I'm going to try to address some of the issues that were presented as challenges that folks see, so please feel free to pose your questions. I entitled this webinar, Cultural Competency, Outreach to Year-Round and Migrant Farm Workers. So I wanted to start just by saying a little bit about who we are, who the Cornell Farm Worker Program is, and we are a land-grant institution. Our program was founded 48 years ago when students became very politicized about the issues farm workers face. And we have a very specific mission, which is that the program is dedicated to improving the living and working conditions of farm workers and their families. And we also seek recognition for farm workers' contributions to society and their acceptance and full participation in local communities. So this, of course, includes a vision in which a state and a nation where farm workers will receive equal protections under the law, earn a living wage, live in comfortable housing, are safe and healthy, and receive due respect as workers and individuals, and participate fully in their community.
So Mary Jo, just to let you know, we're not able to see your screen right now. I'm not sure if you're sharing it or not.
I am. Let's see. It is there, but let's see. What do you want me to do?
I believe you'll have to go up to the share menu at the top and share my screen.
Let's see.
We're seeing it now. And by the way, I forgot to mention that Mary Jo is not going to be using a camera on herself during this session, so that's not a problem with your screen. You should be seeing the PowerPoint, though.
Okay. Thanks so much for letting me know. So just to recap, this is what the mission and the vision of the program is. And so in looking at what our actual work is, we center on three specific components: research, education, and extension based on farm worker needs. So in order to really understand what the needs of farm workers are, we have a research project in which we conduct face-to-face interviews with farm workers as well as small group discussions. And looking at the farm worker population in New York State, among the immigrant workers there, primarily from Mexico or Guatemala, like nationally, many are unauthorized at the national level. Over half of the farm workers that are currently employed on farms do not have proper work authorization. In New York State, we find that the average literacy level is around sixth grade, and this has much to do with sending communities where public education is only financed through sixth grade. So for folks to go beyond that, their family would have to have enough income to send them to live in a larger town that had continuing education beyond sixth grade, which would imply tuition, room and board, books, etc. And so the population which is working on farms here don't fit those criteria. These are people who primarily went to public school up until sixth grade and did not leave their town to go beyond. Many of the farm workers with whom we work self-identify as speaking little or no English. And I say self-identify because at times I feel that their English is better than they think it is. And here, there's a significant change in trends among farm workers. It used to be that about two-thirds of the farm workers here in the state were migrants, and about a third were year-round, and that has completely flipped, whereas now of the farm workers, two-thirds live here year-round and about a third migrate to participate in harvest activities. And some of that has to do with the introduction of workers from Mexico and Guatemala on dairy farms. And I'm sure others will see that in other parts of the country. So one of the questions that drives our research is, why come to the U.S. to work on farms? And I think it's important to understand the global economy of agriculture, as well as some of the historical patterns for migrant farm workers. So just to bring folks up to date, These are the typical travel streams of truly migrant farm workers. Most of the farm workers here in New York State are coming up what is referred to as the East Coast stream. And as you can see, there's some sending from Texas to Florida. And each one of these little hatch marks are stop-off points where people who are migrating to do agriculture stop. Typically, New York, some of New England is the ending point, and then folks return back to their home community. And to get a little bit of clarity about this, we can look at historically who falls into these categories. So historically, on the eastern coast migrant stream, it has been former African-American sharecroppers, different immigrant groups that come, as well as Canadians that come down to work in crops on the northeast. And over time, we've seen this consistent groups of recent immigrants or Puerto Rican workers, Caribbean workers. This changed significantly with the termination of the Bracero program from Mexico to the U.S., where that was substituted with the H-2A guest worker program. And I note that this is a global phenomena, and so those who come to do farm work typically are leaving their home country for whatever reason. This was clear with the Haitians who came to, who left Haiti and arrived in Florida in 1980 due to political unrest in Haiti, Guatemalans, El Salvadorans. So this is one of the patterns of those who come to do farm work. So I want to just talk a little bit. Actually, I'm going to go back here for a second. I wanted to differentiate a little bit about who are migrant, the terms that are used. So when we refer to farm workers, there's a lot of slippage in terms. Sometimes people refer to anyone who comes from Mexico or Guatemala as a migrant. But in farm worker definitions, the migrants are actually the people who follow this stream. They are migrating to do farm work, and they will migrate to their home community, which will not be New York State. Seasonal workers are those people who never move for farm work, but they may be involved in harvest activities. So, for example, it was a very common phenomena when you had women who were stay-at-home housewives who might go out during the fall harvest and pick apples. That is who we refer to as seasonal farm workers. And the third group is year-round farm workers. This is, of course, very typical for those who are working on dairy farms who live in New York State year-round, although they may, their home community may be considered a location in Mexico or Guatemala. So it's just important to understand when you talk about migrants in the farm worker definition, these are the migrants, the people who move, who follow the harvest. So one of the issues which folks at AgriAbility asked me to talk about a little bit is, what are some of the challenges that farm workers face? And I want to just share a couple of observations in terms of how this lifestyle affects their health in particular. I think the primary issue is working hours. On the average, farm workers in New York State are working 65 hours a week. That is the average. So we have many people who are working more hours. So this kind of schedule creates very little time for folks to have social outlets and also creates a situation in which many times people are quite sleep-deprived when they are working. It's also important to take into account the physical dimensions of the work. It's hard work. It's physically demanding work. And for those people who are not from the area, it's very common that housing is a condition of employment. So we have employer-provided housing. And these conditions vary dramatically from excellent housing to housing that really has a lot of challenges. In particular, we see that in rural communities, this is the case of dairy farms where they are now providing housing to their workers because their workers are not from the area. The housing that becomes available is typically older housing stock. And so those of us who live in areas where we have winter weather impacts, often the care in terms of insulation, how it requires an extra step for employers to think about housing issues. We have a research project in which we talk with workers about what some of their challenges are, and housing is by far one of the major challenges that they see. For example, if they are from Mexico or Guatemala, they've never had to deal with freezing pipes. They've never had to deal with, you know, wind coming through the windows, et cetera. So this is a big issue for folks. Also, there is some concern about social outlets, insufficient social outlets. So when folks don't feel like they have any place to go other than their housing on the farm, we see an increase in alcohol consumption, smoking, and prostitution. Ironically, some of the workers have limited access to fresh fruits and vegetables, and this has to do with the risk involved in leaving the farm to do shopping. And when we talked with folks about what they did for entertainment, it was commonly something that was related to getting fast food at McDonald's. So these all have an effect on folks' lifestyles. I have a camera up here. I'm not sure. One of the other elements that we see is having a big effect is that that many of these folks express social, geographic, and linguistic isolation. So social isolation, in part due to the hours that they're working, in part due to the not having connections in the community. Geographic, many people are living in very rural areas of the state, and so it's not easy to move around. And linguistic isolation for those who have limited access to English. So these are, it's important when thinking, I know part of the idea of this webinar was to think through about outreach and effective partnerships with farm workers. All of this is key to take into account. And I noticed that, for example, some of the Goodwill affiliates do provide English as a second language and literacy classes. And these are critical kinds of support for farm workers. The challenge is that farm workers don't have, typically the workers that are living in our area don't have transportation. So having a class in a church, in a small town, doesn't mean that that will be accessible to farm workers unless transportation is provided. So our efforts, we typically have English classes that we provide on the farm on their day off because we have time and geographic isolation as important factors. Another important health concern is that many in our research, farm workers identify as one of their greatest challenges the mental health concerns. The mental health concerns that are related to living in areas of intensive immigration enforcement. As I said, nationwide, more than half of the farm workers who are working on farms have come to the U.S. with improper work authorization. We find there's a very, very high incidence of folks working on farms in New York State that have no work permit. And these people are living in those areas which are our heavy and intensive immigration enforcement. Others of you will probably have noticed that we do know a lot about the southern border and immigration enforcement, but we don't necessarily know a lot about the northern border. Here in New York State, we have all the area along Lake Ontario, as well as the northern border with Canada, which happens to line up with some of our most productive agricultural areas. So in our research, farm workers talk about how living under this constant threat has serious mental health consequences. And another area that folks talk about is just being away from their family, their friends, and the experience of actually migrating, where many folks who walk through the desert, which is a very common way that people get here, encountered dead individuals along the way. And so how do they then adjust when they are typically not living with other family members? And how does this affect their general mental health? We've noticed that for people who are suffering some of these stressors, that they have limited coping mechanisms, which means that there are certain farms where we found people who have problems with alcohol abuse. We also see that these stressors may result in domestic violence, limited coping mechanisms, that folks will rely on prostitution. And another aspect of our research is that some of the farm workers talk about this uncertainty of when it is necessary to seek care, for example. When does a health concern require professional care? How much will it cost? Is there a home cure that will solve the problem? Will the problem go away on its own? And another concern is prioritizing child care over adult care. So if a child has a health issue, that might take priority over getting care for themselves. One thing that we learned in our research is how many among the population that are working on farms rely on traditional healing approaches. And this would be common in their home communities. It becomes much more of a challenge in terms of how they might find the appropriate traditional cures available where they live. So part of the general mental health concerns for immigrant workers include the survivor's guilt, the question of acculturation, the experience of discrimination and racism, the harsh working conditions. For those who migrate, there are periods where folks may or may not be employed, depending on the harvest, the aspects of the harvest. And so those periods when they're waiting for the rain to stop or the weather to change so that they can harvest, there's typically a great deal of stress because they are in this location to harvest, to cut corn, to pick grapes, whatever they're here to do. And if weather impedes them from doing that, there's this kind of unrest about they're here, and they're not making money. We also see that lack of sleep, and some of this is particularly true on dairy farms, where there is typically one person who does what's called the swing shift, which might mean that they work for 4 hours and then they have 4 hours off, and then they work for another 4 hours and then they have 4 hours off. And in total, they may have what seems like enough time to rest, but the schedule itself is such that they can't rest well. And so they talk a lot about, you know, getting off of work, getting something to eat, and then knowing that they need to sleep for a few hours and sleeping a few hours and waking up and going to work. This has a lot of long-term impact on people's well-being. In particular, there are people who have actually said that when they're too sleepy to do their job. As I mentioned, living conditions. On some farms, what happens is it's very common where there may be one housing unit for several workers, and so that creates a situation where your co-workers become your housemates. And so all of those, you can never get away from the workplace when your co-workers are your housemates. And also having unrelated individuals living in the same housing can lead to stressors over things such as cleanliness, who's responsible for cleaning, who's responsible for cooking. And so we see that this has a huge impact on folks' quality of life. In some areas, we actually have workers who are living with family members, and so you see that they recreate their family setting in their workplace. And in other areas, you may have what kind of appears like a frat house, where a number of unrelated men living together in close quarters with or without rules for how they're going to interact and keep their housing in good shape. One of the biggest factors has been just that social isolation that folks experience, in particular those people who came on their own. They're away from their family, they're away from their friends, and they may have few interactions with people of their own age. We have a program where Cornell students go out once a week and tutor farm workers in English. And while it has an important role in terms of language acquisition, I think the most important piece is that for some of these farm workers, this may be the only person their same age with whom they interact. So both the social and physical isolation have long-term impacts. Family disruption. It's not uncommon that we will have the dad who's living here and his wife and his children may be at home. So what is the impact of that ongoing separation from family? And as I mentioned, the stress related to immigration status. Another aspect is just workplace safety hazards. Some of those hazards are related to the equipment that folks may be handling. Some is related to the animals. Some is related to the kind of movement, repetitive movement. Apple pickers, sometimes they're reaching up over and over again. And some of these have to do with chemicals that are used in agricultural production. We did a research project on chemicals used on dairy farms, and it was very common that the workers didn't know exactly what chemical it was. And dairy production often includes that the cattle will come through and walk through a trough with formaldehyde. And that is used to clean a fungus off their hooves. Formaldehyde, of course, is a known carcinogen, but the workers may be handling it, and since it's odorless and colorless, they may not be aware that they're actually breathing the fumes that would have that detrimental impact on their health and well-being. And of course, pesticides in areas where spraying is done, there's a lot of concern about how close that is done near where folks are living, and there are also concerns about the impact of the wind on blowing it towards housing, whether or not people are given appropriate re-entry period, and how they clean their hands, et cetera, their clothing, after they leave a field that has been sprayed with pesticides. So when we talk about farm workers, there's also a certain section of farm workers that that sometimes it's confusing for folks. So let's say you work on an apple orchard. You have people who pick apples, and that's what the community is most aware of, those who are actually in the harvest activities. But there are a small number of those workers may live year-round, and they're involved in other activities besides harvest, which includes planting trees or pruning grapes in the winter months, and processing, both packing and processing. So one of the questions is, there might be workers who work in different activities depending on the time of the year. And while they may originate from Mexico or Guatemala, these two are year-round workers. And the work that they are doing in terms of packing, processing, that has implicit a number of safety issues. Part of those safety concerns are related to working with significant machinery. And so one of the questions which we wanted to talk about a little bit today is, what are the opportunities to link with this population? So talk a little bit about, we talked a little bit about who the workers are. You have people who are working just in picking harvest activities during the season, but more typically it's year-round folks. What are some of the fears of this population? And some of the fears have to do with being in the area without proper documentation, and that combined with a heavy immigration enforcement environment. So what are the opportunities? What are the possibilities? And I think one of the key things to think about with the possibility with outreach and partnership is to think about who the population is and what their concerns are. When we look at who this population is, we have migrants who are here primarily for the harvest. So in terms of outreach and partnership, then one needs to look at what period of time are they there, what are some of the greatest, you know, needs that they have, how would you provide support to this population. And I think the major challenge with many of the migrant workers is the number of hours they work. So in terms of outreach and partnership, it's a small period of time in terms of the year, but also the number of hours when folks would be accessible. Dairy workers, I think that there are more opportunities in particular to work with folks who are interested in having literacy or English classes on their day off. There are opportunities, there are challenges. And the primary challenge is transportation. So if you're undocumented, you cannot ride public transportation. Our experience, we've learned over time that immigration and customs enforcement officials go on the buses in each town and ask if there are individuals that were not born in the U.S. So transportation is an issue. Either providing transportation to, so that farm workers can go to a location where there's some sort of an educational program, or having transportation for folks who to go to the farm. Another issue is literacy. If literacy is a challenge in their own language, the kinds of outreach that folks typically want to use may not be appropriate. So written brochures, pamphlets may not be the most appropriate way to communicate with a population that may have limited literacy in their own language and very little facility with written English. So that has, for us, a lot of our materials are highly visual. We use a lot of drawings and charts and things that folks are not relying on the written word. Another challenge is for families is for those who are interested in doing significant outreach, that there needs to be arrangements made for childcare. That's another concern. A big issue in terms of outreach is timing. When do you actually go to the farm? And in our work with students, we actually have charts where we know who has a day off, what the days off are, and when folks talk about their day off, sometimes on dairy farms, their day starts when they finish at 6 a.m., and that's the beginning of their day off, so it's always really important to take into account that when their time off begins, that typically there's some sleeping time in that as well. For those people who are who have improper work authorization but live here year-round, typically they will do one trip to town once every 2 weeks, and typically they will go to a big box store where they can get groceries as well as items they might need, like shampoo, deodorant, a t-shirt, and also where they're able to send money home to their family. Because one of the other aspects of this is that folks have many levels of economic concerns. It's very common that folks come here with a certain level of debt. They will have borrowed money to make the journey across the border, and that often implies paying significant amounts of money to smugglers who help folks cross the border, as well as those who collect fees along the way. And so it's not uncommon that a person, when they arrive, they may have $4,000 to $6,000 of debt. And so immediately their concern is to start to repay that debt. It's very common that folks come with debt, which implies their parents' house or animals as collateral. And it's also very common that folks come with responsibilities to send money home to support spouses, children, parents, siblings. So these economic pressures are significant, and there's great care taken in terms of what kind of decisions folks make about what they spend on while they're here. There is a network for, since those people who don't have proper documentation cannot legally get a driver's license, then there is few options for folks to transport themselves to town. As I said, public transportation is not an option for those people who are unauthorized workers. And so there's a reliance on a network of folks who offer rides. Sometimes those are people who might be related to a religious organization or a church who offer rides free of charge. Other times workers are paying for their ride to town. And it really, the fees really depend on how far they're going, how much that person wants to charge. So the fees vary dramatically, from $25 to $100 to get to town. So folks tend to, we found this pattern in our research, of folks going to a Walmart where they can get their groceries, get their shampoo, whatever they need, and there's a Western Union outlet so that they can send money home. So I guess one of the questions that was posed was, what is the most effective way to perform outreach, considering limited budgets, or not having a staff person who speaks Spanish? And so for that, I think it is important to know and network with other organizations in your area. We have migrant education programs, which are scattered throughout the state, that do on-farm support for farm workers, migrant health clinics, which include both what's called in-camp, where medical personnel actually go to the farms to perform rudimentary medical support activities such as flu shots or TB testing. There are also medical clinics that are typically set up on limited basis, a night a week, limited hours in some communities, and then in other communities, more longer hours. So it's important to link up and find out what are the different health providers that are already providing support to farm workers. And so I think these are two primary networks that already exist. And so thinking through what are some of the kinds of support that you want to give, taking into account that farm workers are working long hours, often under hazardous conditions. Farm workers are excluded from the National Labor Relations Act, so they do not get overtime pay. They are not required to be given a day of rest. So these are some of the challenges, and I think it's the physical demands of work that are very challenging combined with some of the dangerous aspects inherent in farm work, working around equipment, working around animals. And so this gives you an idea of what some of the common injuries or ailments may be for farm workers. Very common that folks have respiratory ailments if they're working in areas with limited ventilation and they may be handling chemicals. Very common that folks working with animals may be kicked or may have some sort of an injury that's related to the movement of animals. For those people, as you can see in the slide, who are doing what we talk about, stoop labor, a lot of muscular challenges, just the challenges of repeated stoop labor. Folks who are working in the processing area, the challenges are more typically related to the equipment that they're using, equipment problems. So I think those are some of the things that I wanted to say, and really I think it's more important to have some time where we can look at some of the questions that folks are having, and also if people want to contribute a little bit in terms of what kind of outreach they have in mind, what is the full extent of the outreach that they would like to do. It might be useful for us to dedicate some time to some questions that folks might have. So I'm not sure how I get questions.
Okay. All right. Well, we will, Cliff Raz, our IT specialist, is going to be collecting those questions from the chat room. If you have those, please go ahead and enter those if you want to ask your question that way. And after I do our quick poll questions, we will open up the microphones. If you have a question you want to ask verbally or make a comment, just use your raised hand icon, and we will plan to activate your microphone so you can ask that question. This time I'm going to turn things over to Cliff Raz, our IT specialist, and he will be doing the question and answer along with Mary Jo. And again, if you have a question you'd like to ask verbally, simply raise your hand and we'll try to activate your microphone.
All right. So we're opening up the floor for questions. There haven't been any questions submitted yet. I do want to say that I really enjoyed that presentation. It was very informative. It doesn't appear that there are any questions today. So I will go ahead and turn it back over to Paul. And thank you very much for attending the webinar.
Okay, well, thank you again, Mary Jo. That was an excellent presentation. We gave you kind of a tall task in terms of trying to cover a huge range of issues, and I think you did that very well. So if you have other comments, I will be opening a final poll question that just asks if you want to give any other specific feedback. Otherwise, we thank you again for your participation attendance today, and we hope you will join us again for another session.
Thank you, Paul.